The way you see people is the way you treat them, and the way you treat them is what they become. And this week's opening quote comes from Johann von Goethe. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Well, it's nice to be back, folks. I've had 2 weeks off the show because I've been travelling. I simply have not had the internet connection to be able to bring a show to you. And even now, as I'm recording this, I'm not sure whether I'm going to have time to be able to actually create any type of video slideshow to go with it. So if there is no video slideshow with this clip, I do apologise for that. If I've just put some generic graphic in there that I've used before, it's simply because I don't have the time to get the type of editing done that I want to do for the show, folks. It's just very difficult sometimes when you're travelling, and I have been extremely busy on this tour. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke at a gig in Philadelphia, the Anarchadelphia Conference. I may have brought you a show since then, but that was a very good conference. Since then, I've gone to Mount Shasta and spoke at the Avatars of the Earth Gathering, which was certainly an interesting event. I did meet a lot of good people there, though. Got rather cold. We were sleeping in blizzard conditions, folks. It was sort of 30 degrees, 32 degrees up there one night. We're sleeping in tents with the snowfall. It was a little chilly. And I would also like to apologise to the people at that event that I meant to say goodbye to. There was quite a number of people there that I really did want to catch up and say goodbye to before I left, but the snowfall came and we kind of got rushed off and I just couldn't find the people that I wanted to say goodbye to. It was kind of a very rushed experience, the exit from Mount Shasta, folks. So goodbye to everybody that I failed to say goodbye to, and please do accept my apologies. I didn't mean to run out on you all that way. It was just the way things happened. But yeah, folks, it was quite an interesting event at Mount Shasta, to say the least. And I went from there to Spokane, Washington, to attend the wedding of Benny Wills from Joy Camp and his wonderful wife, Sonia. And it was a truly beautiful event, and it was wonderful to go and attend that. But of course, lacking internet the whole time, folks. Lacking internet and having lots of people around, it was very difficult to get any time to record a radio show. And at the moment, I'm sitting in a motel in Seattle, Washington, on my way back to LA, a couple of days here, catch up with some people, and then back to LA for a couple of weeks, and then home. I'll be home on the 22nd of October, so we'll be back to regular shows once I get home, folks. And I do apologize for the lack of broadcasts. Sometimes it's just very difficult to do when travelling, and this time it has been more difficult than most times, again, just simply due to lack of internet, bad internet connections, and pretty well constant moving for the last few weeks. But yeah, the weather didn't help things very much as well. I mean, the weather in Washington, in northern Washington state, in Spokane, was outrageous. It was so cold. There was one morning I couldn't even get my laptop to charge. It was so cold. There was one night we stayed out there, we were staying in an off-grid cabin. It was about 13 degrees, I believe, 13 or 16 or something like that. And that's Fahrenheit, so it was well below freezing. My travelling companion got extremely sick just from the cold, and it was just difficult to sleep because it was so cold. And this was in late September. It was actually snowing in northern Washington in late September. Apparently they haven't seen snow in that local area for around about 100 years. Well, not at that time of the year anyway. I mean, you know, we're still 2 or 3 months away from winter, and it's snowing at the beginning of fall in northern Washington. And so looking at that and considering the coming solar minimum, it really was quite significant, folks, to see this type of weather at this time of year in that area. And as I said a few shows ago, the solar minimum is actually beginning this year and is set to be in full swing by about 2030, 2040. Possibly even before then, and I think we are heading for an extremely cold time ahead, ladies and gentlemen. And that's what the government should be focusing on. I mean, if they're going to be focusing on any type of climate change at all, it certainly isn't global warming that we need to be concerned about. It's the coming solar minimum and the mini ice age that is going to come with it that people should be concerned about. And that's what people need to be taking steps to protect themselves against. because we're certainly not seeing anything coming from the government regarding this event. All we're seeing from the government is theatre. Look at what's going on in the United States now, the impeachment of Trump. All very predictable, of course. Something that I actually mentioned when Trump first came to office, how it was very likely he'd get impeached halfway through his term, and this is exactly what we're seeing. Whether they will go through with it is another question, but either way, it makes great theatre for the masses and certainly keeps their mind off everything else that's going on around them. Which, of course, is what the majority of all of this political theatre and political rhetoric is for in the first place. All theatre for the masses, folks, just to keep people distracted and make people think that politics actually means something and that you're actually doing something to improve the situation when you're not. But if you just put it in the headlines like that and bring it to the people, then you can make a big fuss about something so it can be swept under the carpet later and lost amongst the new headlines. Much the way we've seen with the Epstein case. We only hear little snippets about that, little mentions here and there on page 3 now. But nothing major forthcoming in regard to the arrest and subsequent suicide of Jeffrey Epstein and all of the connections that he had. All of that seems to have just quietly kind of disappeared, the way we knew it would and the way it always does in these cases, folks. But again, so much of it is simply distraction. I mean, the human race is ridiculous when you look at it. You know, if you step back and look at the whole thing, the whole monkey show, it really does look like a monkey show. It's like a circus, folks. You've got this race of people just squabbling amongst each other, arguing over who's the best leader, who isn't the best leader, manufacturing wars against each other, dropping bombs on each other, starving each other, just doing all sorts of outrageous things against each other. Most of it is simply distraction. And above the whole thing, we see this solar minimum coming. And that's certainly going to be a bit of a surprise for a lot of people when it hits. And of course, looking at it a little deeper, it also becomes very apparent that most of the wars that we've been fighting in the last 100 years, 150 years, have not been fought under the pretext that we think they've been fought for. What they've been mostly about has been simply to erase history, to bomb the infrastructure, to bomb the cities. That's why when countries go to war, it isn't the leaders going to war with each other. What they do is they go and they decimate all of the architecture and all of the old structures that were there from the previous civilizations. That's what most of this has been about. That's what most of the wars across Europe were about. And when they bombed Berlin to rubble and Dresden to rubble, when they bombed London, the fires that we saw across San Francisco, the fires that we saw right across America, most major cities in America seem to have experienced a major fire at some stage, folks. Very interesting, that sort of a thing. And this is what we're seeing across the Middle East now. It's all about destroying the infrastructure and erasing the old world so that the people of the present simply don't know what's going on. The people of the future don't know what's going on. Everyone's just fed this false history, fed this false reality, so they don't look at the bigger picture and never ever see the bigger picture because they simply don't have access to it, because they've never had access to the right information. You know, if people knew what their history was and how different it actually is to what we've been told, the world would probably be a very, very different place. But yeah, that's the current state of the world, folks. It really is a joke when you look at it. You know, and attempting to find a way out of this mess, I mean, it becomes almost an impossible task when you look at just how far humanity has strayed from their path. There are still a lot of good people attempting to suggest better options for humanity and suggest better ways we could do things. But as a whole, the human race has most certainly lost its way. Look at the way we used to do things. Even some of the most simple people on earth, the way we used to do things was so much more efficient and so much more beneficial than anything we seem to be doing today with all of the things we have at our disposal, all the technology, all the stuff we have. You know, we really should be going in a positive direction, but if you look at the human race, we're just not. It's just this massive circus of infighting and squabbling and wars and political rhetoric and social rhetoric and nothing which really helps the human experience at all. I'll tell you, someone that I did meet at Mount Shasta, who I can very much relate to in talking about this, was a Dakota Indian. Actually, the chief of the Dakota Indians, one of the men who was responsible for organizing the protests at Standing Rock recently. And there's a man called Chief Black Fox, who is the chief of the Dakota tribe, a wonderful man who currently lives in Los Angeles. I'm actually going to go down to his house and stay for a few days at his place in Los Angeles when I leave Seattle. And the chief is an amazing man, Chief Black Fox. He's actually a direct descendant. He's the great-great-grandson of Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull was, of course, cousin of Crazy Horse. So you've got Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse and this man who is a descendant of both of them. And it was truly wonderful to meet him. And I might actually attempt to interview him while I'm there and perhaps have him on the show for the next radio show that I do. That would be a good thing as well. He really does have some profound wisdom to bring to the world if people would only listen to what some of the Native Americans are attempting to share with the world. There is some incredible wisdom in these people, and it was a great honor to meet him, and it's a great honor to be going and staying at his house for a few days. And who knows what could work out. I might even attempt to organize a small gathering or a small talk while I'm in LA, because I'm going to be there for 2 weeks, so that's something to think about as well. In fact, if anybody has a little venue out there that might hold anything from, I don't know, 20 to 100 people, it may be nice to do a little gathering in LA, some sort of a small event, so that's something to think about as well. So, yeah, it's a thought. If you are someone out there who has an area that we could use to perhaps have a small gathering like that or put on a small talk one evening, it may be something to do while I'm in LA. I'm sure it would be good to catch up with a bunch of people, and I know there's a lot of people in LA that would like to come and say hello, so something to think about as well. I'll just put that out there while I think of it. And if anybody does get back to me on that, then I will let you know on next week's show if that's going to happen. I don't know, it's short notice, but it's just a thought, so we'll put it out there and just see what happens. But something that I'm getting a lot of from people, something that I'm getting from people that are writing me emails and even people that I'm meeting at these events that I'm doing, the people that I'm talking to in the crowd, a lot of people are asking me, what can they do? A lot of people feel like they need to do more. You know, people who are good people in their own lives and they're doing what they can to survive. They're living in a conscious way. They're not ripping people off to survive. They're doing what they can. But they feel like they need to be doing more. And it's a very, very difficult question to answer for a lot of people. There was one lady I was speaking to. She just said, I want to do more to make the world better, to protect the animals, to just do something. And I don't feel like I'm contributing in any way. And really, it's in the personal actions and the little things that we do in the world that will make a difference. And what I've attempted to explain to people is to suggest that one of the best things you can possibly do is to simply be the best person you possibly can and to shine that light out to others. Be a joy to be around and influence other people with your own positivity so that they can see how positive you are from having this information and how positive you are in your own life. And the best way to do that, folks, is to remove stake in the outcome of your actions. And that's a strange thing for people to think of as well. I mean, I've said it so often and people ask me, how do you do that? How do you have no stake in the outcome of what you do? And it's by realizing how short life is and how awesome it is. I mean, how awesome every single moment is as it unfolds. You never know what's going to happen next. I mean, life is this incredible unfolding of events. And when you have a stake in the outcome, you very often miss what's coming next. You very often miss the opportunities that life provides for you because you're focused on something else. And really, it's just these little moments. None of it really means anything. It's about gathering the experience. That's what means something. I mean, the things that we think mean something very often don't, is what I'm attempting to say. You know, we place importance on insignificant events rather on simply observing the event and seeing it for what it is. And it's by realizing these sort of things and realizing how short this experience really is and all the little things we do that we think mean something very often don't. They may be important to us at the time, but if you look back at your life, you'll find that a lot of the things that you thought were really important that you really had to get done were not important at all. They weren't about you. They weren't about the world. They weren't about improving life on this earth. That was simply some little insignificant goal that you thought meant something at the time, but it didn't. Ultimately, it didn't. You know, and really what this is about is the journey. That's what life is about, ladies and gentlemen. It's about the journey. It's about what you do to improve the human experience along the way, your own experience and the experience of others. How much you find yourself, and in finding yourself, how much you're able to find and connect with others. That's one of the most important things, you know, because when you look at the world, you look at what we've become, you look at all of this technology, where it's leading us, as I've very often said, it's taking our life skills from us. It's taking all of the data from us. It's like this huge smart grid, which is gathering the data for the human experience, correlating all the data to see what the current state of human consciousness is at the end of this cycle. And it's removing our life skills from us is one of the most important things to see in this. I mean, and there's so much good in technology. There's so much good stuff we can do with it. But it's got such a hold over us now that even by people attempting to make a difference in the world, it's very difficult to stop the smart grid from where it's going. It's going to be very, very difficult to stop this rolling out because it just has really gotten hold of people and it's just going to follow its natural course. I don't think there's any way we really can stop it. I mean, one of the best things you could do if you wanted to improve the world is to put down your smartphone, to put down all this smart technology. But the problem is that if you do it, it's not going to help unless everybody else does it. And you're going to find that even if the entire truth movement put down all their smart technology, the entire truth movement is just a small percentage of the people of this earth, and the rest of the people are going to continue to use it, and they're going to all drag us into it anyway. So that's the way we're going, folks, and there's very little we can do to stop it. You know, so many people are distracted by the theatre, the impeachment, the wars, the environmental destruction, even wanting to save the animals, which sure needs to be done, but again, it's simply a symptom. You're attempting to put a band-aid on a symptom of a society which is systemically corrupt. It's systemically broken, and it can't really be fixed. I mean, I've been attempting to fix it for years, or at least suggest a better way. And sure, we're having a reasonable amount of success against 5G and stuff like that. I mean, this is happening right around the world. A lot of people are speaking out against that. But telco companies are still pushing it anyway. They're attempting legal action against it. And, you know, they'll find other ways of doing things because they always find other ways of doing things. And that's just not being defeatist or anything. It's simply looking at it realistically. And I think that's something important that we have to do. We've got to be realistic when we're looking at this. And the state of the world, folks, it really is chaotic. It's so much like a circus out there. People running around, nobody really knows what they're doing. As I said, it's like a monkey show. And to be honest about it, just looking at the system and looking at the smart grid, even with the successes we've had against 5G, I mean, even looking at that, you know, it's snowballing now. I don't think there's any way we can stop it. We simply have to let it roll out to its natural conclusion and see what sort of a phoenix we can help rise from the ashes. It's really getting to that point, folks. To be honest about it, it really is getting to that point. I mean, you know, I don't see how we can ever change the direction we're going unless there is some type of mass epiphany. We're not going to get it from any type of political rhetoric or any type of political action. The whole political system is corrupt. I mean, even if Trump was the good guy trying to do the right thing, look how far he's got. Nothing's changed. So there is no remedy in that arena that will ever be found. The only remedy that will be found is when people are prepared to change what's in their hearts. And frankly, I don't see enough people doing that. I mean, it's just a sad reality to have to face, but it is a reality. You know, and there's no good sugarcoating it. It's simply what's happening. And the best thing anybody can do, I would suggest, is to be the best person they can be, to establish good relations with people around them so that they have that support group to be able to get through what is coming. I mean, sure, activism is good. I've engaged in a lot of activism. I certainly haven't been idle in the face of all this, but so many of the activist movements are even infiltrated now. Even the 5G movement seems to be infiltrated. So much stuff seems to be infiltrated, ladies and gentlemen. You know, it's gotten to the point I don't even know who to trust in the so-called truth movement anymore. I trust very few people. I listen to a lot of people. I respect a lot of people. But trusting people, I don't know, I just don't know who to trust anymore. Not when I look at major activist movements anyway. I mean, a lot of the little voices I will trust more than a lot of the big voices, simply because I see more dedication in them. I see more activism on the ground from them. But the problem is that even with real activism, when we try to get involved with activism, we get involved in major groups. And as I said, the groups are infiltrated is the problem. And they lead people in certain directions when the real activism that people could be taking are in their everyday actions on the ground. And you don't need to join any group to do that. All you need to do is, as I said, put down the smart tech and encourage other people to do the same. But again, as I said, with that, can we get enough people to do it is the problem, because with whatever activism we're taking, attempting to change the world, if we don't notice what this smart grid is and what this smart technology we're using is doing, then we're doomed, because that is the system. The smart technology is the new world order. That is the grid they want to roll out. What they've got in place in China now, which is coming to a country in a town near you, that's what they want to do. And all they have to do to get this to happen is to turn the local environment into chaos, and people will accept it. I mean, look what they've done to Europe with the migrant influx into Europe. Look what they've done in Switzerland now. People in Switzerland can't even recognize their country for what it was because of the migrant influx and the fact that the migrants are coming into their country. They're not attempting to assimilate with the Swiss culture. They're attempting to establish their own culture on top of the Swiss culture, and this is undermining and destroying the Swiss culture. So it's a different way to wage a war, ladies and gentlemen. Just simply go in and remove the people of their heritage. So this is what's happening. You know, all you got to do is create these situations. You've got all this animosity and all this stuff going on. And people welcome the smart grid because they think it will reduce crime. It will reduce friction in society. Everyone will be trackable. We'll know where all the criminals are. But in order for people to even begin to accept that, they've first got to create a criminal society where crime is paramount and rampant, so that then they can roll out the means to prevent that crime from happening and to protect you from that crime. Problem, reaction, solution, Hegelian dialectic. It's the way they do it every time, folks. And we're seeing this right around the world. So that's what's happening. You know, the smart grid is happening. Even if we prevent the rollout of 5G, it's the tech. And eventually the people who use the tech are going to want 5G. They're going to hate the protesters who stopped all this 5G from rolling out, because all these people want the tech. They want the bandwidth. They want to have fast downloads. They want to be connected because they think that's what it's all about, because they're so disconnected from the inner technology that they have. And that's one of the problems as well. That's why we take to this so easily, folks, because we have inner technology which will connect us anyway. We have inner technology that can connect us to everything, to nature, to people, to animals, to everything. You know, what we refer to as instinct that we see in animals and connection that we see in a lot of the native people around the place, simply by activating the pineal gland, I mean, we would have far more access to higher senses and to higher realms and higher forms of communication we've got now if we were not so locked down. And it is this locking down of our pineal gland and this locking down of our higher senses which is what has made this whole smart system so attractive to us to begin with, you know. We take to this instant communication with each other like a fish to water because it is so natural to us, because we can do it anyway. We don't need the tech. It's just when you attempt to explain it to people, they don't believe you. They think you're getting all new age on them or something like that. You know, people have been trained to not look at this sort of stuff and not believe this sort of stuff is possible, simply because they've been programmed by Western society. But I'm probably getting a little bit off track there with that, folks. But, you know, this is how far we've been led from what it means to be human. So when you look at all of this, you take it all into account, and you look at the activism we've mounted, the stuff we've done through this truth movement, I mean, the best we can hope to do, I think, from this point, is to bring awareness to people, awareness of themselves and the power that they have, and awareness of what is actually coming, and of the need to connect with those around them, to establish ties with good people around you. Now, there's still a lot of good people in the world, folks, for all of the terrible stuff that's happening, for all of the infiltration of the truth movement, for all the infiltration into these activist movements. There are still good people. The problem is that we're looking for some sort of external saviour, some sort of external source. You know, we join these activist movements because we think the movement itself is going to bring about change. But really, as I said, it's the personal actions, the little things we can each do every day in our own lives that makes a difference. Now, we can join any activist group we want, any political group we want. But if we're still using the tech, we're still supporting all of this stuff, which is the grid itself, then there's no point in any of these things. I mean, we can join all of these groups, and it's not going to make any difference at all if we continue to use the very tools of enslavement that are given to us quite willingly and go along with it. What does it matter what group that you join? You know, because you're just ultimately going towards the same place, the same direction that you always have been, because it's the tech itself. It's the smart grid. That's what people aren't seeing. And it's a really difficult situation we've got ourselves in. It's a real paradox. I mean, even bringing this information to people, I've got to use the tech in order to do it. Yeah, we need the tech to have the communication with each other in order to share the message that we need to get rid of the tech. How do we do that? It's a tricky situation, isn't it? You know, they've done this to us as well by removing landlines and removing all the stuff, phone boxes. I mean, you can't have regular means of communication anymore, because they're removing them all. It's very difficult to do anything without a smartphone these days. Now, even trying to connect with people on the internet, it's very difficult to do without a smartphone. I've got a laptop, and I find that a lot of the programs that people chat on, you can't chat to them. You can't connect with people if you're on a laptop. You can only do it on a smartphone. For example, a lot of the people that I've met while I've been traveling, their main form of communication is Instagram. And I say to them, well, what's the point of that? Because all you can do on Instagram is post pictures. You can't ever chat to each other on Instagram. And they say, well, yes, you can. There's a chat applet. And I looked at it, and there is a chat applet, absolutely. But it only exists for mobile phones and tablets. You can't get it for a laptop. So they're trying to force people to get rid of their laptops and to move onto the mobile phones. Again, folks, all part of the plan, all leading you in the same direction. And the problem is that people use these. People use the cell phones rather than the laptops. If they were to demand that the chat applet was available for laptops and they refused to take their cell phones anywhere, then they couldn't lead you into this system. But people don't do that because they want the convenience of the cell phone, because unfortunately they're addicted to these things. But that's how they do it, folks, and that's the little actions that people could take. You know, just watch where you're being led. You can still have the tech, you can still have the communication, but watch where you're being led into these mobile scrying mirrors that everyone's carrying around, because these devices are what are going to be used to track you, and these devices can be accessed. I mean, a police officer can pull you over, grab your mobile phone, punch in a code and find out everything about you, all your friends, everything you've chatted about, find out whether you're a person of interest right there on the spot, and you can disappear right there on the spot simply because you are carrying around with you a device which contains the entire sum total, all the data of your life up to that point, everything you've ever done online. It's all there on that device that you're carrying in your pocket, available to anybody with a uniform on who wants to check that information out and decide what sort of a person you may be according to whatever parameters the government has put in place. That's the danger of these cell phones, folks. For all the conveniences they offer, that's the danger, and that's where they're leading you to. So you've really got to question your actions, folks, and see where these actions are taking you. But anyway, I think we've reached break time, so I better leave it here for now, and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll be right to speak to you again in a few minutes. Don't go away, because there's plenty more to come. And welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, so it's really interesting when you look at the situation that we're facing, you know, because as I said, even with all the activism that people are doing, it's all very well for them to be active, but if they're not looking at what the smart tech is doing, what's it all going to be for? That's the thing, and that's why it becomes very sobering when you look at this, because if people aren't prepared to put down their smartphones, then nothing is going to change, and frankly, people just don't seem to be prepared to do this. It's a very sobering reality, folks, but it's something that needs to be faced. You know, as positive as we want to get about things, it's something that needs to be faced. A lot of it is dopamine addiction. Another part of it is the instant communication that people get from these cell phones. They like to have everything done instantly for them, and so they like communication to be instant. They don't want to have to wait to go home to get a message on a phone or wait for a letter to arrive or anything like that. They want everything done this second. That's one of the things that keeps them attracted and keeps them stuck on these things. Another thing is people's craving for information, more and more information. People want to know everything about everything, and they seem to want information. The information life can give them more than the wisdom that life can give them, and that's an important factor as well. Yeah, the problem is that people are so lost and so disconnected from themselves that they look for gratification in these things. Yeah, the loss of self is something that I've talked about so often right since the beginning, which I first came on the air. Yeah, this is the crux of the whole thing, folks. This is the key to the whole problem, the loss of self. The fact that people are so disconnected from each other because they're so disconnected from themselves, that's why I've often said if we could just respect ourselves enough, we would find that respect for other people comes by default once that point happens. You know, once you get to that point of self-respect, once you really know yourself and really know what this human experience is, you see all the barriers that you thought existed between you and other people just simply fall away. And it gets very frustrating to see this type of a situation that we've sort of got ourselves into, whereby we're very often simply unable to communicate with each other because we don't know ourselves enough. We don't know how to express ourselves in the right way. And so many people are offended by little things. You know, they have these little scenarios in their mind of how certain social situations should work for them, and if they don't work in that way or they don't flow the way they want them to, they get offended, they get withdrawn, they sit there and pout because they have a stake in the outcome. They have a stake in the outcome of everything they say. And we've got a situation where everybody's had everything taken from them, so everybody has this desperate need to be heard now. This desperate need to do something, to have some form of value, to get enough likes on Instagram, to get enough likes on Facebook, to have some value in the virtual world, because they don't feel like they have value in the real world. And that's the situation that we've got. People's need to have value, people's need to be heard, and everyone wanting to clamber to the top of the pile to establish themselves and have their 2 cents worth and throw it in the pot and act like it means something. Now, too many people are simply not prepared to step back a little bit and just take in the bigger picture and see what's really happening here. And so many people seem to want to emulate others. Yeah, really, when you look at the Instagram culture, you see people posting these photographs of themselves and these pictures of themselves in certain situations, then everybody else tries to emulate that. They go, wow, that looks good, I want to be like that, rather than wanting to be like themselves. And most of these pictures that people post, most of these scenarios that people post are all very, very contrived anyway. They're not real life. And many people are seeing these types of things and this type of image of themselves as being more important than real life. You know, it's all about their image. It's all about what they appear like to other people, whether they appear cool, whether they appear as someone who will be an influence on others. I mean, this is a big thing now, of course. Influencers. I mean, what is an influencer? That's a strange title to give someone. Someone who has a lot of followers on Instagram or Snapchat or something is now classed as an influencer. And this is a great description of the mentality behind the whole thing, because they influence other people to emulate their actions. And the powers that believe they be love this. They like to see people just copycatting other people and attempting to be other people and following other people and getting that look or whatever, because they're not thinking about themselves, not looking at the world, they're not looking at the situation that we're in, they're not doing anything to actually improve the world. All they're doing is trying to look as cool as somebody else and be someone that gets the attention that someone else has got, because that seems to be something people crave, is attention. You know, the lack of value, the lack of having any real ties in the family unit when they grew up. This is what's caused all of this, folks. The theft of people's parents and the replacing of those parents with a television set so that people grow up not feeling like they have any value, because they never developed those natural bonds with their parents they were supposed to develop. And so they never really felt like they were heard or noticed at all. And so they spend the rest of their life attempting to be heard or noticed because they think that's what life is about. You know, it's like when you take something from somebody, they don't know what you've taken from them, and they don't know what they're searching for from that point. But most people are simply searching for some form of value in their lives, some form of meaning. They just want to be noticed. They just want to be heard. They want someone to actually listen to them because no one ever has. And they don't even realize that this is what they're searching for because they don't realize that is what was stolen from them when they were children. That's something that society has done. And when you really look at that, folks, if you can step back and see the significance of that subtle mindset that's been instilled in everyone, you really do see why the world is in the state that it's in and why people are just running around with like chickens with their heads cut off, banging into each other, all attempting to get their voices heard above the cacophony of everybody else. You see exactly why this is. And it's because these natural connections and these natural bonds were never developed when people were children, the way they used to be developed in normal family relationships. Normal family relationships is just something we don't seem to have very much of anymore, unfortunately. Of course, the question there would be, well, what is normal? What I'm talking about is, you know, loving, wholesome relationships, you know, the sort of relationships where we don't have technology getting in the way of real human bonding. To me, that's normal anyway. You know, these sorts of things are extremely important in human development, and the loss of these sorts of things has really been hugely detrimental to society, folks. It really has. All you got to do is look at things. And if you can really get back into the psychological root and the psychological cause of all this, you see that that's where it comes from. That's where the real problem developed in the breakdown of the family unit. And when you look at that and when you look at the studies that were done into it, you see that this has all been done very, very deliberately. And that's probably the most disturbing part about it all. Unfortunately, most people are simply lost. Most people are looking for something and they're not even sure what it is they're looking for. I mean, some of the people that I've met while I've been in the United States are so confident and have got so much going for them, and beautiful looking people, talented people, and yet when you get them alone and you really start talking to them, very often they're feeling very, very insecure about themselves and just lost within themselves. They're looking for this thing, this magical place that they call success or happiness or whatever it is they're looking for, and they seem to think it is this tangible place that they're going to get to. Many of them don't realize that the place that they're looking for is the journey itself, and they're missing out on the journey because they're so focused on what the outcome of the journey will be. As said by John Lennon, life is what happens while you're planning other things. And it's really important to take that into account, that the important part about it is the journey. It's the moments that you're experiencing every day. This is the place that you're looking for, and very often we're missing out on that place because we think that place exists at the end of the path. We don't realize that the path we're on is the place. There is no other place. There is no place you're going to get to. There is no place of enlightenment. It's the journey itself, and it's what you do with the information that comes to you along the way. But most people have this focal point of what life should be once they've made it, in inverted commas. But what is making it? You know, making it really is discovering yourself, and that is what life is about, and that is the most important part of life, and that is the most important part of the journey. That is the journey. Life is a journey of self-discovery. There's nothing else to it, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't matter about all the stuff that you collect along the way. It doesn't matter what image you think you've built for yourself. It doesn't matter whether you've built yourself up to be a pop star or this or that. What about you? What have you discovered about you? And what have you gotten from the journey? What do you have to offer other people to help them discover themselves? I mean, there's so much more to this than what we're given to believe, ladies and gentlemen. We're given all these superficial things that we're told we need to measure ourselves up to, when really the entire journey of life is a journey of self-discovery. And that's what we're missing out on very often because, as I said, we've got this focal point. We've got this thing that we think we need to attain, this certain persona we think we need to become, rather than simply becoming ourselves along the way and taking the information in from the path that we're on and applying it to ourselves. And when you do that, it makes all the difference to your life. Now, unfortunately, most people go through their lives acting as their own worst enemy because they beat themselves up so much about what they think they should be, when really what they should be and what they've always been is what they are, and that's all they ever need to be. It's just discovering the best way to be the best of that. That's the trick. You know, but so much can be discovered by going within and finding that personal peace. Many people can't do it. They're constrained by belief systems, unfortunately. I do meet a lot of people who are terribly constrained by belief systems. Many people are subject to Bible programming, of course, in the United States. It's very, very thick in this country. And there's other belief systems that people have adopted all along the way, which very much affect their relations with other people. And in fact, affect their relations with themselves as well, because they're always judging themselves according to external parameters. Even their relationship to the earth, their relationship to God, or whatever you want to call it, is all judged by external parameters. They'll look to a book that somebody else wrote to find out what their relationship with God is, rather than simply establishing their own relationship with their own creator. I mean, that's an easy way to do it, folks. If you really can put down all of the stuff, you'll find that you have a huge connection to a creation source yourself, and you don't really need any books to get in the way. This is something that I've often said to people. Yeah, I have a great relationship with God. I just don't need religion to get in the way of that relationship. Why do I need to have someone else's interpretation of what I'm experiencing given to me when it's not my experience? I mean, they're giving me their experience. I'm not interested in their experience. I'm interested in what's happening with my connection with this source. And I don't really need anybody else's influence in there to explain that connection to me because I can already feel it. And I think that if people are prepared to put all that stuff down and simply look within themselves, they'll find that this connection is there for themselves as well. And they don't really need any religion to get in the way. They don't need anyone else to get in the way. You know, it's having the confidence in yourself to really know what you are and to see that beauty in others that makes all the difference, folks. And as I said, you won't see real beauty in others until you've found the beauty in yourself. And once you do find that beauty in yourself, respect for others comes by default. And it doesn't mean that you're going to become this perfect, glowing person and you're going to be in the best of moods all the time. You're always going to be polite to people. You're always going to never get in a bad mood or never get offended or never argue with anybody. It's not about any of that, folks. Of course, there's still going to be people that offend you. There's still going to be people that annoy you. You're still going to raise your voice sometimes. You're not going to become this perfect guru type person. It doesn't happen. You know, you've got to be prepared to express your emotions anyway, and you've got to allow yourself to express your emotions. I mean, when I get angry with people, I'm quite happy to tell them that I'm angry with them. But it's gone in a couple of minutes. You know, I can express myself, I can say this sort of stuff, and then 2 minutes later, it's all done, it's over. I've allowed the emotion to be released from myself, so it doesn't build up, doesn't turn into something else. You know, too many people are afraid to do that. They're afraid to embrace their emotions and actually express themselves and say what they feel. Everyone wants to be politically correct, and this is a terrible thing to do, folks. I mean, political correctness is self-censorship. It's a form of tyranny. Political correctness is tyranny disguised as politeness, and it's damaging not only to the people that you're holding back from, it's also damaging to yourself. You know, but it's damaging to these people too because you're not telling them the truth. You're not telling them the truth that they could possibly benefit from hearing. You know, and we should be able to do this. We should be able to express ourselves. I mean, you don't have to be openly aggressive and ugly towards people, but you should be able to openly express yourself and say what your opinion is without the need for anybody else to be truly offended by that opinion. I mean, opinions are opinions, folks. There's no reason for anybody to be offended by anything anybody thinks, really. It's all a matter of choice. it's a matter of choice, and very often it's also a matter of programming, but you have the choice as to whether to accept that programming or whether to think for yourself. So when you really break it all down, it's always a matter of choice. Free will, folks, and that's one of the good things about this society, I suppose, is that we do have free will, and that's a very important part about it as well. You know, free will, we have the freedom to choose whether we want to comply with this system or not. We have the freedom to choose whether we want to support this type of corruption or not. The biggest problem, of course, is fear. Most people's fear of reprisal, fear of being locked in a cage, fear of death, fear of whatever. Fear that if you actually speak your truth, someone will come and stomp you down. Well, yeah, maybe they will. But what would you rather do? Would you rather speak your truth and die on your feet, or would you rather live on your knees? And what if that's really what all this is about, folks? I've mentioned to you before, what if this is a soul test? What if this is simply an exam before the main show? What if you've come here to show people what you're actually made of, and that what it's really all about is the mood that you're in when you die, how you're prepared to die, how much you're prepared to take, and how much you will allow the fear of death to overcome what you know is right. You know, and why would you be afraid of something like that anyway? I mean, how much are you prepared to take before you're prepared to say something? What if these are the real questions of what life is about, folks? And what if that's why evil exists? So that you have the choice as to whether to accept that evil, whether to speak up against that evil, whether to stand and shine your light and be a righteous person. What if that's what all this is about, folks? Now, it's not about inflicting your belief systems on others. It's not about self-gratification. It's not about climbing to the top of any social pile or any economic pile. It's not about any of that stuff. It's about the moral stance that you adopt. It's about where you allow your moral compass to aim you and the direction you take from that aiming. I mean, what if this is what it's about, folks? What if it really is a soul test? What if this is simply an exam to find out what you're really made of? How many people do you think would be passing this test in today's world? I'm sure there's a few, but so many people seem to be completely unaware of the test. So many people seem to be completely unaware of themselves is the problem. So many people are lost. You know, if you really look at the world, folks, what you have is a lot of really sad, lonely people wandering around and wondering why they feel so disconnected from each other. That's an unfortunate reality, and even when you look at that, a lot of people aren't even prepared to admit that. But if you can step back and look at it, that's very often what you see. Well, that's what I've seen very often in my travels anyway. I've seen a bunch of really lonely people really searching for some meaning in their lives, not realizing that life itself holds its own meaning. The path itself is the meaning that they're looking for. You know, the discovery of themselves is the journey that they're on and the journey they're trying to find. Very often people are wondering why they're here, and yet they're alive, and they don't even know themselves, and they're questioning why they're here. Well, perhaps it's to get to know what you are, to get to know what it means to be conscious, to get to know what it means to interact with other versions of yourself, and to see how your actions actually affect reality in a positive way, or in a negative way, depending on what you do, but they actually have a profound effect on reality. You know, the things we say and do have a profound effect on the physicality around us. We might think that they don't, but really they do. I mean, we are all the center of our own universe, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to look at the multiverse, you want to look at all the different universes that exist, well, there are millions of them right here on this earth, because each person is the center of their own universe, if you can look at it that way. Now, everything radiates out from you, and the overlapping of human consciousness, the overlapping of human interaction, is like the overlapping of a multiverse. It's a huge web of consciousness that we've got here, folks, and just trying to find that little golden nugget in the middle of it is the most significant part of the journey, but it's there. It's there. If people could just see it, you know, I often speculate on just how easy it would be to change the world if there was some sort of an epiphany, if people just discovered the truth of themselves and discovered the beauty of themselves. As I've often said, we could change the world in a day. We could literally change it in 3 seconds if it was just in the form of some epiphany. I live in the hope that this will happen one day, that people will simply wake up and go, oh my God, I have value, and just realize what they are and see the beauty of other people. I just pray that this will happen, you know. I don't know whether it ever will, but, you know, I think that's about the only thing that's going to change things, because the human drama is so complex, and you have to wonder what we can ever do to change the world if people aren't prepared to listen. And people simply aren't prepared to listen very often because they're so caught up in trying to find themselves and so caught up in this experience they're having, you know, that you just have to look at it and think, well, it's snowballing now. That's why when I look at the tech, I think, well, it's snowballing and I can't see a way out that doesn't involve some sort of epiphany. I guess that's why I continue to do these shows, just in the hope that perhaps I can help someone discover themselves along the way, because I think that's what it's all about. But folks, well, I think we have reached that time again. It seems to come very quickly when I do these shows. It seems to come very quickly when I get into these raves about consciousness and history. Consciousness and history are two things that seem to fascinate me, and the time goes very quickly when I start to talk about them. And so we have now reached the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen. It's been great to come back and talk to you again this week, and I will try to get a show out to you next week. I should be able to. I'm going to attempt to actually record an interview with Chief Black Fox, so that'll be good if I can get that done. But I'm going to be in motels for the next couple of weeks, so we'll just see how we go with all of this. It is very touch and go when I'm on the road, folks, especially with the terrible internet connections that I've had recently. But I will get a show out to you as soon as possible. As I said, after October 22nd, I'll be back home in Australia anyway, and we'll be back to regular shows, and that'll all be good until I take off again in February. In February, of course, I will be speaking at Anacapulco in Mexico, and you'll find a banner to that on my website, thecrowhouse.com, and if you click that banner and purchase your Anacapulco ticket via that link, you'll find that you'll get a 10% discount on your ticket. And that's always a good thing to do. That's quite a significant saving. So do go in that way if you're going to buy an Anacapulco ticket. If you don't go in that way, then you will be able to perhaps just put in the coupon, the Crow House or Crow House, and you might find that you'll get the discount that way as well. But the easiest way is to simply go to my website and click the Anacapulco banner and use that link to purchase your ticket, so you get the discount that's guaranteed from that link. That's the only gig that I've got booked for next year. I'll probably be doing AV11 in the UK as well, I imagine. So that will be a couple of gigs that I've got next year. But next year, I think, will be pretty much the end of travel for me for a while. I really do want to get off the road and spend a little bit of time at home and try to get these films done and get back to where I was before the big hack that happened to me like 6 or 7 months ago. So I'd like to get back in that sort of a mode, folks, and get back to producing some documentaries and not just doing the radio show. And I can't really do it while I'm traveling. So that's something that I really do want to get done in 2020. But as I said, folks, Anacapulco next year, and I will be probably doing some events around Australia as well. I mean, I like to do a few local gatherings and meet a lot of the people around Australia and see if we can get some sort of activism happening on the ground. So I'll get into that as well. I mean, I certainly won't be idle while I'm at home, but I just want to stop traveling overseas. I think it would be a good idea for my health. Traveling really should come with a health warning, folks, especially aircraft travel most definitely should come with a health warning. But that is it for me, folks. I'm pretty well completely out of time. Thank you to all the people who send me so many kind of emails. I will really try to get on top of some of these emails, folks. I have answered quite a few, but I've still got quite a few to get through. But thank you to all the people who continue to write to me. Thank you to my Patreon supporters. I could not do any of this were it not for my Patreon supporters, so I cannot thank you enough for that. And thank you to all the people who send me so many letters and so many personal items and gifts from overseas as well. It's always wonderful to receive these little packages that I get in the mail. I never know who they're from, and it's kind of like a lucky dip opening these things, and it's a wonderful gesture for people to do that. So I really do appreciate that as well, ladies and gentlemen. But that is it for me. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. I'm pretty sure I'll be able to get a show to you next week. If not, then it will be the week after, but I'll get one out to you as soon as I can. But thank you very much for tuning in today. I look forward to speaking to you as soon as I can. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.